Live from our nation's capital.
This budget thing is going to do nothing. Space Force, I still think it's interesting. President Trump not playing his cards yet. Headlines, policy, and politics colliding.
Bloomberg, sound off. The insiders, the influencers, the insights.
I would rather see a congressional solution. It's part of my DNA.
The Senate map in 2020 looks a lot different than it looked in 2018.
You really have a divide within Team Trump.
The president has to do exactly what people sent him here to do, which is to get it done.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
Impeachment Public Week 2. All of the latest on the more than five or handful or so State Department officials set to testify this week. Meanwhile, did you hear this? President Trump met with Fed Chair Jay Powell and Treasury Secretary Mnuchin to talk about the economy in a rare sit-down. All of this coming just this morning, and the latest on 2020 and the U.S. and China trade fallout. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and Bloomberg Radio. Lots to get through. I went up briefly over the weekend to Asbury Park to check out where Bruce Springsteen was based, and I'm on the train, I'm coming back to Washington last night, and I'm like, wow. What a busy week it's going to be, which is why I am so thrilled. This is a first time on the program for our esteemed first guest, my colleague, my boss, one of my top bosses here at Bloomberg. Hired me at the company, folks. Marty Shanker, Bloomberg's chief content officer, a.k.a. the man in charge. Marty, thank you so much for being here.
I have two bosses, so I'm not completely in charge.
So let's start with impeachment. I was at the White House earlier this morning, and it seems like this is a make-or-break week for both Republicans and Democrats as it relates to the impeachment saga. The first round of hearings for this week set to begin tomorrow. Gordon Sondland on Wednesday. Gordon Sondland is the man in the middle of all of this, the EU ambassador. He was reportedly on the phone call with President Trump when Trump asked Sondland whether or not the investigations were going along with Ukraine President Zelensky into the Bidens. How crucial is this week for the impeachment, Marty Shanker?
Well, obviously Sondland is a key witness because he had many conversations with President Trump, and even more broadly, the Wall Street Journal reported this morning that Sondland was keeping other White House aides abreast of how things were going on this effort to get investigations underway. So he's a key figure. I'm not sure whether this is really make or break week for the investigation into impeachment, because I think the sides have hardened and no one's going to change their mind.
You know, even beyond that, yesterday, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi was speaking on CBS Face the Nation about all of this impeachment saga. Take a listen to what she had to say yesterday on CBS Face the Nation. Here she is.
He should not frivolously throw out insults, but that's what he does. I think part of it is his own insecurity as an imposter. I think he knows full well that he's in that office way over his head, and so he has to diminish everyone else.
Speaker Pelosi saying the president in over his head. Then she goes on to characterize this entire saga as a violation of the Constitution. Here she is again.
Well, there are many things that the president does that are completely out of the question, that are not impeachable, and they're about the election. But when it comes to violating the Constitution of the United States, as he undermines our national security, jeopardizes the integrity of our elections, and dishonors his own oath of office, that's a bad impeachment.
She goes on to dare him, Marty Shanker, Bloomberg chief content officer, essentially to testify. To testify and to work with the impeachment inquiry. He then, this morning, I was at the White House when it happened, tweets out that he would be willing to submit written answers. Is that a mistake on behalf of the president?
Well, he said he'd strongly consider it,
right?
Which, you know, I think Donald Trump strongly considers about 30 things a day, but then doesn't do them. And I would be supremely surprised if he were to testify either in writing or in person. But look, Nancy Pelosi knows how to play Donald Trump. And of all the Democratic leaders that I see, she is the one who really gets under his skin. And you could hear from those sound bites how she does it. She very matter-of-factly and, you know, not using extreme language, calls him out for what she thinks he is. And I think he doesn't know quite what to do with that.
It really is fascinating just to watch all of this play out in terms of where the chatter is, where Speaker Pelosi stands within the Democratic Party, with so much going on the left flank of her party as well. And even just this in the last couple of hours, the headlines continue to trickle in virtually in real time. Holmes, remember him? David Holmes. He is the staff member at the U.S. Embassy in Kiev. He testified last week behind closed doors. He's the one that said Trump asked Sondland about the quote-unquote investigations as it relates to Joe Biden in the 2016 elections. Now we're hearing that he is going to testify in public this week on Thursday. Meanwhile, coupled with all of this is Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. And we kickstart the day with NBC News reporting that he is on an island unto himself as it relates to the administration and that they're getting attacked. And then he comes out and releases a comment just within about 2 hours ago and says that he's proud of the team. His words, proud of the team. I always defend State Department employees, he says in a press briefing a couple of hours ago. And he declined to say whether he agreed with Trump's tweet during Yovanovitch's testimony last week. Marty, wow.
Yeah, and I have to think that's in direct response to Tom Friedman's editorial in the New York Times today, mm-hmm. where I think it was headlined, Mike Pompeo was last in his class in ethics at West Point.
And brutal.
It was a really brutal takedown of Pompeo and how he basically stabbed in the back Yanukovych's testimony before Congress and took him to task for not in the consequence of him being a military man, ultimately a graduate of West Point, how he failed to take care of his fellow soldier in battle. And it was really a tough, tough editorial. And he was responding directly to that.
It is really interesting. I'm going to let you go here in a second. You've been so generous with your time, Marty Shanker, Bloomberg's chief content officer. We finally have a new poll out as it relates to impeachment. An ABC News Ipsos poll, 70% of Americans think President Trump's request to a foreign leader to investigate his political rival, I'm reading from ABC's poll here, was wrong. A slim majority of Americans, 51%, believe that the president's actions were wrong and he should be impeached and removed from office. But only 21% of Americans are saying that they're following the hearings. Put this in relation to where America is right now as we start week two of the public impeachment.
Well, the interesting thing about that poll is that 25% differential of people, 70% who agree that he did something wrong and only 51% think he should be impeached and removed. That's his base.
Yeah.
Those are the people whom Donald Trump can do no wrong and certainly can't be impeached for it. So that actually does not bode particularly well for 2020 for Donald Trump, because most of the polling shows a 40% approval rating in and around there. That suggests that support may be drifting away.
Marty Shanker, thank you so much for your time. The boss himself, Marty Shanker, Bloomberg's content officer. Coming up, panel reacts. We've got an all-star panel today. A great show today. A.B. Stoddard's here. Kevin Walling's here. So much to get through. You can download the Bloomberg Sound On podcast on Apple iTunes at Bloomberg.com or by downloading the Bloomberg Business app. You can also find me on Radio.com, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. I'm Kevin Cirilli. I'm still annoyed about that Eagles loss. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1. Thank you, Marty.
You're listening to Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
I think I owe about half the people in this town hoagies after that loss yesterday. My Eagles losing to the New England Patriots. A.B. Stoddard's here. She is also devastated. Can we just say that you're devastated?
Yes, actually, I have empathetic devastation because I love you so much.
Thank you, AB.
I can see it in your face, and it's really hurting my feelings.
Yeah, it really was a bummer. Yeah. It was a really big bummer. AB Stoddard's associate editor and columnist at Real Clear Politics.
And president of the Kevin Cirilli Fan Club.
Thank you, AB.
You know it.
You know, you're the only one in the club.
I like to be the voting secretary.
And I'm sorry, Kevin, while your mic was off, he's a Democratic strategist at HG Creative Media. What'd you say?
Also in the fan club.
Oh,
as
wow.
The recording
yes, guys, this
secretary.
Is too much. Yes. Enough about me.
We need notes. We need
you know,
to keep notes.
You know, it's been a time to be a reporter. Okay, let's get to – well, first of all, I didn't even get to cover all of the impeachment headlines with Marty because they're happening in real time and they're happening so quickly. And every day there's just a new twist and turn. I didn't mention that the president criticized Vice President Pence's aide, who's set to testify at the impeachment hearing. He slammed Jennifer Williams as she's going to testify this week. And he called her a never Trumper. She's a longtime State Department employee, currently a special advisor to Pence. And she was on that July 25th phone call. It's amazing, AB. I mean, what else did I forget happened today with impeachment?
Oh, I don't know. But there's just I think all eyes are on Sondland because of the reference to the Wall Street Journal reporting about the emails, whether or not he's going to take the fifth and everything. And he really, you know, executed the Rudy President Trump black ops plan. Right. So that's really a big deal. And everyone's in hot anticipation of that. But it is amazing to see. We're not amazed, right, when we see these tweets when President Trump throws people who are working in the White House for the vice president, you know, on the train tracks and calls everyone never Trumpers. But it's really hard to watch Mike Pompeo not say something about Marie Yovanovitch and not say something about Bill Taylor. It was really a terrible moment.
I want to pick up on that because you're so closely watching that whole orbit. And so when you heard from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo this afternoon, what was – take us inside his mind. What was his calculation in standing by the president and not taking those questions on Yovanovitch?
So his calculation, I think he's shown us, is always to stand by the president. That's the number one priority. And any comments that would help morale at the State Department, any comments that would give credibility, credit, any kind of support or affirmation for the service of Bill Taylor, the testimony of Bill Taylor, the service of Marie Yovanovitch, the testimony of Marie Yovanovitch would be seen by President Trump as disloyal. And that's been made clear to all of us. And we know from the NBC reporting you referenced from first thing this morning that the president is dumping on Mike Pompeo because these people who were doing their jobs in a nonpartisan way, trying to further our national security goals and our foreign policy objectives, are testifying. And President Trump thinks that's something that Pompeo should be stopping or controlling in some way. So it was just it's one thing to read the reporting and imagine these conversations. And it's another to actually, when you know now you've watched Taylor and Yovanovitch, it's really hard to see the Secretary of State not affirm the value of their service. It's just, it was really, really staggering.
I think if there's one thing the past couple of years that it's done, it's shined the light on the brave men and women who are in the Foreign Service. And it's a very different role than the military, who are you know, patriots in their own right. But there's thousands of them all over the world who work either at the State Department or for the State Department.
Through every administration, no
matter what party.
But
very
Kevin, what's awful is that we're not going to get people like that if they're going to get trashed, if they're going to be targeted and they're going to be vulnerable and they're going to actually worry for their security, their own personal security and that of their families. We're not going to get the best people coming in anymore. The people like a Purple Heart recipient like Bill Taylor, Marie Yovanovitch, 33 years for life in hardship assignments and all these different countries moving around. We're just not going to get that if people have been watching these hearings this week and see what can happen to you in those roles.
Wow. Pivoting off of that, the 2020 campaign, we haven't really seen much of differentiation in terms of where the candidates are. But if you're Senator Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, or them, Kevin Walling, Democratic strategist, they have to start making some scheduling some scheduling calls because this thing is going to be kicked into to early part of next year.
Yeah, it's a good point, Kevin. And you alluded to the interview that Speaker Pelosi gave on CBS yesterday where she talked a little bit about the timeline. And it's fairly open-ended, right? So we don't have necessarily a schedule for the Intelligence Committee as of next week in terms of who will be called. I think there's some moving pieces. But it's every indication that this is going to go into next year. There were some hopes that it would be wrapped up by the end of this calendar year, by the end of December. But it's very clear, as you point out, you've got five or so, Elizabeth Warren, Michael Bennett, Cory Booker, Bernie Sanders, and
Amy
Klobuchar. I know, poor Michael Bennett. I only saw a picture of him on the stage in Las Vegas yesterday addressing that convention out there to remind me that he's actually running as well. So you've got these key senators.
Maybe
that
for Secretary of State. But that's
potentially,
another story.
Who will be forced to sit through days, weeks of testimony before the Senate committee. Of course, that's going to be run by the Republicans, and they have indicated that they want to, you know, call their own witnesses, Hunter Biden, others, and extenuate that process.
You know, it's good news for Pete Buttigieg, the South Bend mayor of Indiana, because he surged to a new poll, the Des Moines Register poll on CNN. Did you see this poll? I mean, I always check the museum front pages thing.
Yeah.
Does anybody else do that?
I do too, all the time.
Yeah. Do you do that, AB?
No.
Oh, well, so
should
they have
I?
This thing. Absolutely, because it's every newspaper in the country.
Is it going to end when the museum closes?
Oh, gosh.
I don't know, AB.
I hope. Well, Johns Hopkins bought it, right? So hopefully
we're
they'll continue
we're going to get to the bottom
that.
Of that. Yeah. Stay tuned this week.
Anyone listening from Johns Hopkins,
public
please.
Public service being trashed.
Yeah.
But they have all of the front pages, and the Des Moines Register today has Bernie, Warren, and Biden on like a climbing up a giant pile of hay, and then Buttigieg is on top. And this new Des Moines Register CNN poll has the 37-year-old mayor of South Bend, Indiana, the first choice for 25% of Democratic caucus goers. And that's a significant increase from the 9% he had back in September. Obviously, the race is still incredibly fluid. Warren's at 16%. Biden and Sanders are at 15%. But you look at these numbers, they're going to have to be in D.C., except Biden and Buttigieg, JB.
Right. And then ostensibly that could help them. So a lot of the Republicans, schemesters in town, are really hoping that McConnell would get it done by the end of January in order, because they, of course, would like Senator Warren to be the nominee. So and they don't want to advantage Biden or Buttigieg. So that's I don't know what they can do. It's obviously up to Nancy Pelosi. If I were advising the Democrats, I would tell them to slow the hell down. I would not do this without John Bolton. He is the linchpin. I would make those senators who are going to have to weigh in on this go through every news cycle about Lev Parnas and Rudy Giuliani, who is possibly has been wiretapped and is the target of a huge and broad and deep investigation by the Southern District of New York. Find out if the other Secret Service discussions with President Erdogan or President Putin or the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia get leaked. All sorts of terrible things could befall this president in terms of more revelations. Mulvaney, the acting chief of staff, Rudy Giuliani have told associates around them they don't think the president can throw them under the bus because they know too much. There is more to this. And a trial as soon as possible was the best thing for Republicans. And if Pelosi is smart, she will wait and take this one day at a time and see where the revelations take us. And she will not rush it.
I just feel like we have we always have great panels on this show. But when I think of the talent in this with Marty, AB, and Kevin, what a great show. What a great perspective. Coming up, we're going to talk Hong Kong. We're also going to talk the central bank. Did you see this? To be a fly on the wall in this meeting, you've got the Fed chairman hanging out with President Trump at the White House. And then they have dueling statements. Wait till you hear what the tweet was and what the Fed chair posted from the Board of Governors. Can't make it up. Download the Bloomberg Sound On podcast on Apple iTunes at Bloomberg.com or by downloading the Bloomberg Business app. You can also find me on Radio.com, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. I'm Kevin Cirilli. I owe everybody a hoagie. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
And I don't have anything to say. I'll defer to the White House about particular statements and the like. I don't have anything else to say about the Democrats' impeachment proceedings.
He's got nothing to say, folks. That's Secretary of State Mike Pompeo earlier today talking about, well, not, I mean, I guess he wanted to get out in front of a camera and say something, but didn't say anything as it relates to the impeachment inquiries. Public stage round two set for this week. A.B. Stoddard's here. She's the executive editor at RealClearPolitics.com. Kevin Walling's here, Democratic strategist over at HG Creative Media. Let's talk policy. We've had an impeachment-heavy show today. We talked about 2020, but there was a lot of policy news that went on. First and foremost, on the trade front, USMCA could still get done by the end of the year. Then, it always happens when I'm at the White House, I'm mic'd up, I'm on Bloomberg TV, and they get in my ear and they go, okay, did you see this statement from the Fed? I'm thinking to myself, what happened at the Fed? Powell, Fed Chair Jay Powell, met with President Trump earlier today at the White House, and they put out a statement saying that they had a great meeting, and Powell's comments were quote-unquote consistent with his remarks at his congressional hearings last week. Very like Fed speak, very by the book and deliberate and boring, for lack of a better word. I mean, meaning that's the tone that they want. Every word that comes out of the central bank can move the markets. Trump tweets out, I hate to laugh, just finished a very good and cordial meeting at the White House with Jay Powell of the Federal Reserve. Everything was discussed, including interest rates, negative interest, low inflation, easing, dollar strength, and its effect on manufacturing, trade with China, EU, and others. It's just remarkable, AB, just to see, you know, just to see interest rates and negative interest, all of that, all of the stuff that like would make Fed watchers cringe, just to see him tweet that out.
We know about the Rolaids addiction that everyone who works because of his obviously not only ability to move the markets recklessly, but his, you know, he enjoys it. I mean, it's, we know that. So we know that when he designated the Chinese a currency manipulator in the first week of August, everyone had to scramble. They had tried to talk him out of it a million times, had to scramble to come up with a statement later in the day. This is how he rolls. But it's, you know, he's largely gotten what he wanted. And so he's not technically leaned off the bullying of Jay Powell for a while. And I think that was an issue with Republican senators. And as you know, not everything is. A lot of things they just let him scream about.
It is interesting. I mean, last week, just the dynamics of the president speaking at the Economic Club of New York City in raising criticism that he's raised for quite some time against the Fed chair. And then the next day, you have the Fed chair still just refusing to engage almost and just being incredibly
responsible.
Fed speak. Yeah, Fed speak.
But doing what he's supposed to do.
Exactly. I mean, right? Reassure markets.
He can't indulge himself. Yeah.
And right. But it is interesting to watch just that calculation. I want to mention something else that's been in the news today, a second policy issue. Kevin, get your response to it. And that's Hong Kong, because the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has fast-tracked legislation put forth by a bipartisan group of senators led by Senator Marco Rubio that would show the support for the Hong Kong protesters and require the State Department to do so annually, at least annually. And this is something that the AB and I have talked about before, but this is something that many folks in the Republican Party have been wondering, where is the president in terms of Hong Kong? And now you're seeing Republicans in the Senate put forth this legislation.
Yeah, it's just another example, I think, of Republicans in the Senate kind of forcing the president to do the right thing, hopefully. You know, I was so moved when the protest started that, you know, they're singing the Star Spangled Banner, the protesters in the airports, right? You see the video, the images are so compelling. And, you know, to AB's point earlier about diplomats putting themselves in harm's way and often being attacked by this president, the same thing goes with these reporters on the ground that are right there in the thick of things, covering these protests and seeing these students that have kind of now been holed up in a specific building, a few buildings on campus, that now the military police are moving in on those areas. We must do something, and it is hopeful to see bipartisan action on this, hopefully pushing the president in the right direction.
AB, I've got a question for you, because the president hasn't said one way or another whether he would sign this bill into law. The House has passed a similar version of this already. I think what we sometimes lose focus of is that Hong Kong is an avenue for there to be direct foreign investment into China. It's a middle ground of sorts between the U.S., Hong Kong, and then ultimately would end up in China. And one of the things that Rubio's bill wants folks to do, as the Council of Foreign Relations puts it, is to ask the president to report to Congress on whether U.S. technology has been transferred from Hong Kong to China for use of, China's surveillance systems. We're in the middle of a trade war with China. China says they don't like this bill. This could prove a tricky situation. Hong Kong is definitely wrapped up, I would say, in the middle of the U.S.-China trade war.
Oh, I will be completely stunned if this actually goes through the Senate and the president is on board, because he has intentionally been silent on this issue. There was reporting months back that he told President Xi that he was just going to be cool about Hong Kong and not, like, make it difficult for him because, you know, we've got trade stuff going on. Trump is all transactional. He does not stand up for American values unless it's the easy punchline to market something he wants. And this is the Republican senators panicking on their foreign policy values. And this is what's so hard to see someone like Pompeo. I know is a Russia hawk. He is naturally be horrified about what's going on in Hong Kong. He would push back. All these people
and Pence
are not
gave that speech a couple weeks ago where he was very critical of China as it relates to Hong Kong.
Right. So they can get upset about the NBA, but when it really push comes to shove and the protests get more violent, I would love for Mitch McConnell to be right, that this is going to get fast track and head over to the president's desk, and we're going to make a statement as Americans and as a unified government. I can't imagine that happening.
So those are the two policy issues of the day. We talked about that. Coming up, what's on the panel's radar? A.B. Stoddard and Kevin Walling will both fill us in on what they're watching and chronicling. And I'll give you what's on my radar. Download the Bloomberg Sound On podcast on Apple iTunes at Bloomberg.com or by downloading the Bloomberg Business app. You can also find us on radio.com, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. I'm Kevin Cirilli. I'm headed to Atlanta on Wednesday after Gordon Sondland's testimony. We're going to go right to the airport, and we're going to cover the Democratic presidential debate this week. Keep listening. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
It's Monday, folks. Monday after an Eagles loss, Patriots win. It's really just like it wasn't my Sunday. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and Bloomberg Radio. Hey, Penn State's looking good. Kevin Wallach's here. Kevin Wallach's a Democratic strategist. Did you pick a team yet, Kev?
Go
for 2020, Kev.
Irish. Go for 2020. Notre Dame.
Who's your candidate?
Oh, for president?
Yes.
Oh, I like them all.
Oh,
Amy Stoddard. Oh,
we would be lucky to have any of them.
Amy Stoddard from Real Clear.
The more the merrier.
You said it like you were going to pick someone. Like, oh, I like Biden.
I thought we were talking football.
Well, I'm not even going to make an analogy there on which game.
You know who I like based on my Instagram feed.
Yeah. I mean, you're a Biden guy.
Yeah.
All right. There's this other thing happening this week that they've got to pass a government funding bill. I mean, just the...
We shut down in three days, Thursday.
Just to read Eric Wasson's reporting on this. He covers Congress for us for Bloomberg. And his reporting on the Bloomberg Terminal. House Democrats on Monday released the text of their four-week spending bill. 4 weeks, that's it. Four-week spending bill negotiated with Republicans to avert a federal government shutdown on Friday. The measure, which would extend funding through December 20th, would also keep the Export-Import Bank open through that date. Wow. So they're kicking – they're doing this to December, AB, and then – you take a look at December. And
December 20, which is just awesome.
I mean, yeah, perfect timing.
I mean, look, I it's pathetic and it's gridlocked and it's horrible and everything else. I actually, like you, Kevin, I mean, I believe that the USMCA negotiations have been genuinely productive because Trump will use this do-nothing Democrats crazy stuff and put the deal into like his tweets, but no one else is trashing Pelosi, saying the Democrats are trying to sink it. They're actually – are getting close to something, and that's real, and that's terrific. So is the casualty of legislating during impeachment, you know, getting together on the omnibus or whatever. You know, that's I count on everyone in both parties in Congress to be cool and get this, you know, on Thursday over the line. It's that President Trump sometimes likes really negative surprises. And so I don't know what he's going to do, but maybe he'd like to save it for 5 days before Christmas and do it then. I don't know.
It's also unlike him.
You can never rule out a shutdown. The point is in the age of President Trump.
Right. Because exactly. It's very unlike the president not to go after any leverage, and a USMCA is leverage, and a shutdown arguably could be leverage. Kevin Walling,
yeah. To AB's point, I couldn't agree more. I think the fact that we're not hearing a lot about USMCA is a good thing. He's not really out there tweeting about it. We're not hearing a lot from the leadership, whether it be Richie Neal, Speaker Pelosi, what have you. So I think the idea that we could get an announcement by Thanksgiving, I think, is not out of the realm of possibility. And it would be a bright spot to end the year on, something with bipartisan support.
All right.
But a shutdown creates problems for the USMCA.
And it also creates problems for the stock market because market volatility seen in the past with shutdowns and with USMCA. They're not trading on impeachment. I feel like a broken record. I've said it every day on the program. The street isn't moving on impeachment headlines and the testimony. They are moving on every single word and report as it relates to China trade, USMCA trade, and potentially even that government shutdown. All right, what's on your radar, Kevin Walling?
I think you alluded to this at the top of the segment. The fact that David Holmes has been added to the lineup for Thursday, he was that foreign service officer that was called in after Marie Yovanovitch's testimony. He spoke with the Intelligence Committee behind closed doors on Friday. He's back before the committee alongside Fiona Hill on Thursday. He was the one that overheard EU Ambassador Sondland on the phone with Donald Trump. That is going to be critical testimony. And that was the big surprise coming out of Bill Taylor and Ambassador Bill Taylor's testimony last week.
Do you want to add something to that? Save what's on your radar, but do you want to pick up on just how crucial that testimony will be?
Yeah, I mean, that story, that anecdote of that phone call is so damaging. It's, you know, Ukraine is like wired by the Russians. The president's a national security threat. He's making, you know,
everyone's on their cell phones. Everyone is on cell phones.
But it obviously really paints more of a picture of how much in cahoots Sondland was with the president to carry out this
This drug deal.
What's on your radar?
So I wrote a piece for today about how the Louisiana runoff on Saturday and the Kentucky governor's election, I have marbles in my mouth now, are really signs that health care is a grave threat to the Republicans and President Trump next year. What has been disappointing is how little Democrats talk about this. They fight over Medicare for All, which is a gift to Republicans, and if they nominate someone who supports it, the Republicans will be rescued from the fact that they have totally ignored the number one issue of voters in 2018 and 19 and then 20. If not, if the Democrats can get back to discussing the lawsuit that threatens to implode, the remainder of the program, the ACA, talking about how Medicaid expansion is really an opportunity for them in purpling states where it hasn't been expanded, Florida, North Carolina, Georgia, Texas, I'm forgetting the rest. And these are Wisconsin. These are places where they can make this an issue that I believe got Beshear elected and helped reelect Governor Bill Edwards in Louisiana, because Republicans are ignoring the fact that this is popular, and these places, these red states with rural voters facing rural hospital closure crises and everything, want this expansion.
It's a huge story that
huge
no one's
story.
Talking about.
It should be discussed at the debate this Wednesday. Mm-hmm. I mean,
you know, and I'm going to be in Atlanta. We're going to be at not Tyler Pager. I texted Tyler Pager today. I said, I'm going to Tyler Pager Studios, Tyler Perry Studios. Tyler Perry, not Bloomberg's Tyler Pager. He's our colleague here. He does
Where I think
job
they have there. A full-scale White House on the set.
Really?
That you can visit. Yeah.
Oh, I'm visiting.
Because they have shows
I'm
taking
there for
place
like 12
in the White
hours because Sondland's testifying that morning. okay, you want to know what's on my radar?
Yes.
Marijuana. Did you see this? Joe Biden was speaking at a Nevada town hall on Saturday, and he says, quote, the truth of the matter is there's not nearly been enough evidence that has been acquired as to whether or not it is a gateway drug. Marijuana. This is Joe Biden. It is a debate, and I want a lot more before I legalize it nationally. I want to make sure we know a lot more about the science behind it. Kev, everyone else in the field that's a top-tier candidate, is not referring to marijuana as a gateway drug.
I was very busy listening to my record player earlier, and I missed that story.
All right, I think that's a dodge.
You know what? I appreciate that Joe Biden said what he really feels and didn't try to create a position that he was.
I think there has to be more evidence. There needs to be more research. There needs to be more research. But I mean, crime bill, that's the record he's going to get attacked for, and he's saying that weed is a gateway drug. That's going to be a significant hit for him, especially if he's a top two candidate. All right, thank you, AB. Thank you, Kevin Walling. Thank you to the boss, Marty Shanker. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg TV and Bloomberg Radio. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.